Hey folks, welcome to episode 295 of the MLF Bass Fishing Podcast. Come to you live from the shores of Smith Lake in somewhere in Alabama.
Yes, somewhere near Coleman.
Yeah, I'm Jody White. I'm joined, as always, by the award-winning Kyle Wood.
Yeah.
We're not even going to talk about what the award was.
Just let that sink in and think about it.
Folks, Google it. Anyway, we have a great show today. We are going to try to not talk for too long because, Kyle, the leadoff is a just fantastic interview that you crushed with the now reigning Abu Garcia College Fishing National Champions.
That's right.
That was Cole Breeden, Cameron Smith from Drury, and that'll be up first. Then you and I, we're going to wrap up the Natty.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to very, 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 very briefly touch on Lake of the Ozarks.
Briefly.
And then preview Smith Lake and pretty much call it a day because, you know, we've got dinner to make and a derby that needs to start tomorrow.
That's right.
That being said, I guess what we'll do is we'll advertise some stuff to you right now and then flip you over to an interview. So hang tight. Few lures have stood the test of time like the original Rattle Trap by Bill Lewis. And now, with the help of Major League Fishing pro Mark Daniels Jr., we're launching the SB57 and MR6. Go to rattletrap.com to learn more.
Mm.
Beautiful, right?
Mm. I love it.
Kyle, you probably want to buy a Rattle Trap right now.
I just added some to cart.
Awesome. Well, folks, buy some Rattle Traps and settle in and listen to just the glory that is our reigning national champions.
This week on the podcast, we have none other than the recently crowned 2021 Abu Garcia College Fishing presented by Yeti. National champions, Drury University. We got Cole Breeden. We got Cameron Smith. Congrats, dudes. You guys just got home, right?
Yeah. I mean, we just got home, and we're just getting everything unpacked pretty much. And we actually just got finished up hanging our check up in our apartment and situating our trophies around. So,
So I guess you guys texted me a little bit ago when we were setting this up, and, you know, you were like, oh, we're ready. And I was assuming I was going to have to call, like, each one of you, you know, and do, like, a little conferencing. But you guys are actually roommates outside of being teammates?
Yeah, we're roommates.
Oh, nice. I see. That's why. That's probably why you guys click so well together, huh? You're just constantly thinking what the other guy's doing?
Yeah, it kind of seems like that on the water sometimes. So. We've been fishing together for 3 years now, so.
Yeah, we fish together. Ever since I've been in school, and that was Cameron's sophomore year, but we just started living together this year.
Oh, nice. So
we fish together a lot longer than living together.
And then we got another guy on the team that's also one of our roommates too.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, I think before we get too far into this here, because it's rare on the podcast that we have, you know, multiple people talking at once, I think we should kind of do a little background and just, you know, who you guys are. You know, how, maybe like where you grew up, how you got to, you know, Drury, and then we'll go from there. So maybe Cameron, maybe you kick us off and just kind of tell us, like, you know, where you grew up, how you got into fishing, and, you know, kind of what brought you to Drury.
All righty. Well, I grew up about 30 minutes south of Springfield. I fished a lot of ponds and rivers and stuff growing up with my grandparents, my parents, and then a few trips to the lake every now and then. Kind of got started bass fishing with one of my neighbors. He would take me out and we'd go to Pontotere and Table Rock and stuff and fish around and fish some club tournaments and such. Then I kind of joined high school fishing and really, really liked that and ended up getting a little bit of a scholarship from Drury to come here and fish for the college. So.
Oh, nice. And how old are you, Cameron?
I'm 22.
22. And what are you doing in college there? What are you? What's your major?
I'm a biology major. I'm kind of doing that pre-med, pre-PA school kind of deal. So looking to do that or fish someday. So.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, weigh your options. Both seem like, you know, pretty fun careers. One of them seems like it would probably, you know, pay off a little better or at least, you know, lead to a little more comfortable lifestyle. But I can respect that. I'm down with that. I guess you said you're 22. So what year in school are you? Are you a senior?
Yeah, I'm a senior. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. I don't want to jump the gun. I know sometimes in college fishing, there's some dudes that look like they're 45 years old and, you know, maybe they're back in school or maybe they've just been there for a while. I don't know. Maybe they really like it. But that's cool, man. I like it. It's a pretty, I feel like that storyline there of just, you know, growing up around fishing, getting into high school fishing, and then, you know, scholarships in college are kind of, or college fishing are, you know, more of a thing now than ever. Like, shoot, I graduated college in 2009, and, you know, that was like the early days of college fishing, right? And that, I mean, that was, there was a lot of cool things going on that FLW was doing, but stuff like that just, you know, wasn't really happening. So that's a cool deal.
Yeah, I also, what's kind of cool is I got to watch high school fishing pretty much blow up in Missouri, too. I fished the first ever high school tournament, like the first ever derby in Missouri.
Oh, cool.
And I actually took home a big bass in that tournament, so it's kind of cool.
Damn.
And ever since then, it's just absolutely blown up. It's been awesome.
Oh, man, it really has. I guess, Cole, you know the drill. Hit me basically with your, you know, your story.
Yeah, so, I mean, I started fishing before I could even remember, you know, when I was, you know, two or three, and my dad probably started taking me fishing, and we had, you know, some older bass boats whenever I was younger, and, you know, just being, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, I remember that's when I started being able to watch kind of the Bassmaster on TV and just stuff like that, and so whenever I was like 8, 9, I started like wanting, I really wanted to like be in competition like those other guys and tournament fish somehow. So I was just begging my parents to like, you know, figure out something. And they ended up finding the TBF and they did a tournament series that had two divisions. It was 12 to 15 and 15 to 18 year olds. And I was only 9 at the time, but they let me fish. Even though I was a little bit younger. So I got to fish those up until, I think, junior high. And then, you know, I fished actually that first tournament that Cameron was talking about, the first Missouri High School College tournament. But I was still in eighth grade at the time. But I ended up fishing that and then, you know, just stayed on the high school fishing team. And, you know, I never really did that well in high school. I think my best finish was 16th. In the tournament, and, you know, I always loved it, and, you know, I'd watch YouTube videos every night, of, you know, the pros talking about whatever, trying to learn about fishing, but, you know, it just never translated. My dad's, you know, wasn't a huge, I mean, he liked to fish, but he wasn't a huge fisherman or a tournament fisherman or anything, so, I mean, me and Cameron are the same in that aspect. Our, you know, our dads weren't tournament fishing, fishermen like a lot of guys were that helped guide them, so to say, and so, you know, I played football too, and so college fishing never really crossed my mind a whole lot. And I really seriously looked at playing football for the longest time until my senior year.
What position were you?
Started looking around, quarterback.
Hey, nice.
And that was just kind of, you know, looking for money to go to school. I mean, that was basically, you know, the reason why I wanted to do it more than anything else was just, you know, how can I help pay for my college? And then, you know, I started looking around and I was like, wow, well, you know what? You know, college fishing is getting pretty big right now. And started looking into it. And I messaged several schools about, you know, about their teams and whatnot. And I never heard back from anybody except from Drury. You know, I emailed Rick, our coach, and he got back with me really quick. And we just started talking and stuff. And I had already decided I wanted to come to Drury before any other teams even messaged me back at all. And nobody else that I talked to or, you know, any other Missouri schools were, you know, giving out any sort of scholarships or helping you pay for it. So that kind of helped me with what I, you know, decide that I wanted to do Drury. And Rick just made it sound so great that it was hard to pass up. And, you know, I started off doing architecture, but I quickly learned that that was not going to be doable doing fishing as well. That's a very demanding major. And, you know, the professors pretty much told me at one point that I had to choose fishing or architecture. And, you know, I made that decision pretty quick. And I switched to
I don't blame you.
I switched to marketing. And, you know, I think that's going to allow me to pursue my interests more. I mean, sure, design architecture was cool, but just being able to stay in the fishing industry in general, or, you know, do something that I actually like more, that's going to be able to, you know, help me out with that. So I think that was a good decision, even if I wasn't doing it for the fishing reason. So
sure,
that kind of
sure.
helped me figure everything out. And so now I'm a junior, and I've been doing that marketing for about a year and a half. So I'm a little bit behind on my marketing classes, and it's possible that I'll have to fit, like, add one more semester to be able to finish my classes, or do a summer semester where I take a bunch of classes. But so there's an opportunity to fish a fifth year, but I'm not really sure if I'm going to try to, you know, get my summer classes done. That way I can graduate on time or not. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. So both, like, you guys kind of have, you know, like you mentioned there, Cole, it's kind of a similar thing, but also, you know, like some subtle differences. But I think, like, Cameron, did you play sports in high school? Or, you know, I guess through, you know, youth, whatever, elementary school, stuff like that. Did you play sports?
Yeah.
So you guys are,
yeah,
like, competitive dudes to begin with.
Yeah, growing up, I kind of played everything from baseball to soccer. You name it, I played it, basically. And ended up actually sticking with, of all things, swimming. Competitive swimming.
Oh.
So, was actually all right at that in high school. Did really well in conference every year, but fishing was kind of where my heart was at. So,
interesting. There's a actually a rookie on the pro circuit that was a competitive swimmer. He swam in college, and his name is Michael Caruso. Dude is like the most in shape dude on the pro circuit, but big time swimmer. So, you know, but I think. I guess what I'm getting at there is I feel like we see it a lot where guys, you know, if you're that come from like you guys, you know, it wasn't like you were in this big tournament fishing family, you know, from day one. You just liked fishing. And then you kind of have this, you know, competitive nature by playing sports. And then you get to college where programs like this exist. And now you can kind of like best of both worlds. You know, you could travel around, you get to see different fisheries, but you're still competing. And it, yeah, I think it really helps a lot of this stuff kind of blossom, which is cool to hear that both of you guys kind of have that going on.
And I think for us too, like, since we've always been competitive, like you said, just being in sports and always been in competition, like, you know, going out and just fun fishing, I mean, that's fun. That's what we love to do, and that's why we fish. But just the being in tournaments and being able to be competitive is just, it's just such an awesome thing. It's just, you know, it keeps your drive going. It allows you to fish hard. I mean, it's cool to see results, you know, something that you love to do and actually compete. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's hard to put into words, like, you know, just how awesome tournament fishing is, really, and how exciting it can be and how much we love it. So.
Yeah, just like the highs and the lows that you can have, like, even within, like, an hour on a day on
oh,
the
yeah.
water. It's insane, like... Yeah, we've had those times, so
yeah.
It makes it interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll kind of ease into the, you know, the national championship on Grand. I guess I should probably preface it with, Cole, I met you last year, Toyota Series on Table Rock. You top 10 there. You were actually the very first boat I stopped on day one. I saw a dude out in, like, no man's land. I saw a Nitro. I saw a Ghost trolling motor, and I'm like, I don't know what this guy's got going on, but he looks like he's scanning around for stuff. And, you know, lo and behold, you go on to top 10. I got to interview you and, you know, get to know you a little bit then. So we fast forward to Grand here. And, I mean, there were some local schools in it. And, you know, I was kind of looking through the field list. I'm like, well, you know, I know Cole. I know you and Cameron have fished together, you know, for a while. So, you know, seems like you guys probably know what's going on. And I asked you guys at registration, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, like, never fish Grand. I'm like, well, you know what? Might as well give you guys a call. So you guys, you're the morning story interview for the national championship. And I think it was pretty good because I felt like I got that vibe from you guys that you had something going on. But at the same time, like, it was tough enough that you weren't sure. And I don't think a lot of schools were really sure what was going to happen, right? Is that kind of the vibe you guys had going into day one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first day of the tournament – it was extremely tough in practice. And we talked to, you know, just seeing on the water, seeing guys, you know, after we're done practicing. I mean, we talked to 7 or 8 guys who, you know, most of those guys didn't catch a fish, and the rest of them caught 1 or 2 the whole practice. And then, you know, us and our other teammates that were there had the best practices that I had heard of from any of those guys. And it was still extremely tough. And, I mean, we just knew that it was going to be like that for the whole field, because we talked to guys, we went all over the lake, and, you know, that's, I mean, we have, like, Lake Ozarks, it's kind of the same deal where you just have those early spring cold weeks that can just be extremely tough on anybody. And So, you know, that's just kind of what we figured it would be. And, you know, we figured that catching a limit every day would be good, but we thought, you know, it'd take some, you know, decent sized bags to actually pull off a win. But yeah,
I liked Cameron, you told me something, I don't have it pulled up, but it was something like, you know, if you catch, you know, if you have 2 good days of fishing and 1 fire day, you're probably going to win it, which I thought was one of the more college quotes I've gotten in recent time frame, because like, I'm not about to get a quote like that from you know, probably anyone on the pro circuit, and probably not even really on the Toyota series. So I appreciate that. You guys, you know, no one really busted them that big, but like, for you guys, it seemed like catching keepers was actually pretty easy. Was it that way the entire event?
Yeah, kind of like all the way through practice, through the event, it was pretty easy for us to catch a keeper. You know, in practice, we caught anywhere between around 5 to 10 keepers a day. And usually they weren't super big ones. I think the biggest one we had in practice was like 3.5 pounds, but that was like, you know, pretty, a lot bigger than any of the other bigger ones we caught in practice. But that's what we knew it was going to take, is just like pulling the littler ones out during the tournament for those like 2.5 to 3.5 pounders was really going to make a big difference. We weren't getting like the real big bites. Like you were seeing a couple of people get like catching those 5 pounders, but we figured it'd be a lot easier for us to target like those 3 pounders and just try to put together as many of those in a limit as possible.
So,
and like when we were practicing, you know, most of the fish we caught after we actually ran onto our little pattern that we found, like the first couple fish we caught, there was like schools of them. I mean, there'd be like 5 to 10 fish in a school, and, you know, we'd catch one out of that school and then, you know, go around to the next spot and catch one, and then go around to the next spot and catch one. And so, you know, we figured we'd be able to catch limits easy just because, you know, those fish weren't really that big, but there was a lot of them there.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured, you know, 5 14-inch fish a day wouldn't be too hard, but
yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't help us out too much. So we still had to look for different things for bigger fish, but the numbers of fish were definitely there.
Well, it became apparent after day one that the lower end of Grand was really where things were happening. Duck, drowning, and Ketchum, which is where you guys were kind of the 3 creeks that were just, I mean, seemed to be on fire. Dudes went in there, dudes caught fish. I ran around a lot of places on the lake and, you know, in different creeks and didn't see people catch fish. So break down for me, like, A, why did you look at that end of the lake? And then B, elaborate a little more on what that pattern was.
So we kind of looked at it as we were looking for the cleanest water possible, knowing that cold front has kind of gone through and messed a bunch of stuff up. They were going to be tough to catch, and they're even tougher to catch when it's, you know, they're in dirty water. So
sure.
We ran up the elk first day of practice and found some fish, but they just would not bite. We couldn't get them to bite nothing.
Was it too clear up there? Because the water looked, I mean, pretty good up that way, up the elk.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. The water looked great up there. But we just couldn't trigger the fish up there for some reason. We couldn't get them to bite.
And there was a lot of pressure there in practice even.
Definitely a lot of pressure there.
With us, so we think that might have been a contributing factor to that. But
okay.
So we decided, let's go find some more clean water. Ran all the way down to the opposite end of the lake. And ended up in Ketchum Creek. Found the water we liked and kind of put our stuff together.
Okay.
And also we were thinking, I mean, we hit Honey Creek on our way down to the dam. Yeah. And it seemed kind of dead, really. Like, we didn't have any bites or really see much going on. And then, you know, we made our way down to Ketchum and fished, like, one bank. And it was, like, kind of one of the main steeper banks. And we figured pre-spawn, early pre-spawn maybe, You know, it's been real cold. Maybe they'd still be close to that winter pattern where they'd be on them steep banks. And it was just like barren. There's nothing there. And then we just were like, okay, we haven't got like a bite all day. We'll just keep fishing around. So we just stayed on that bank and kept fishing. And then once we got, you know, towards the back of the creek, we started getting bites. And then the further we went back, the more bites we got. And that was kind of surprising to both of us. But also something that we kind of found out. I mean, this is something that we kind of learned and probably should have thought of earlier on. But just that water by the dam has been a lot more consistent and stable the past couple weeks with this water being so cold, and the clarity in the water temperature has probably not fluctuated as much as it has up the rivers with all the water running and whatnot.
For sure.
So we think that was probably another factor as to why a lot of guys did good down the lake, is because it was just more stable and the fish felt more comfortable and stuff like that.
Another thing is, like, with that cleaner water down there and it being more stable, you know, those fish could get up shallow on those banks, and when the sun came out, the like during practice in the first 2 days of the tournament, it kind of warms those rocks up in the shallows. So the bass kind of like to get up there by them and, you know, get a little bit of warmth because they've been cold, so cold the past week and such. So
you guys were definitely fishing different than most of the other teams I watched, in terms of, like, Cole, you were talking about this, the steeper banks. But like, when I watched you guys in the way back at Ketchum, right, like around those docks, you know, you idle around the one section, go back, you're casting up towards the bank. When I first saw you, I'm like, okay, they're fishing brush, or they're fishing maybe some of those anchor pilings at the base of the docks or something. Was there anything like that around there, or were those fish just kind of on that steep bank where it kind of, you know, in the backs of those creeks where it flattened out, like you kind of had a little bit of a ledge or something?
Yeah, so we never really had a, like, we caught some fish off brush back there a little bit in practice, but it wasn't really that consistent. Like, we could never, like, dial in on that. So we actually just kind of found them. They were on the bank, and you could see them on live scope schooled up there, especially, like, the little ones, like those little schools of five to ten fish. So they'd be up there just kind of sitting on, like, basically kind of boring-looking banks, I guess is what we kind of called it. So stuff that other people weren't fishing.
And like, those docks that you were talking about, they were those marina docks, and – you know, the numbers of fish in there were just crazy, but they're all little ones. And, you know, the first day of the tournament, we caught a 3-pounder out of there and a couple other, you know, decent keepers. But for the most part, they're all small. And then the days 2 and 3, we never had any big bites. But between those docks, but out a little bit deeper, maybe 10 foot, between one of them, there was one of those dock anchors. There was a big piece of concrete, and it had a decent sized fish on it. And then around between the next set of docks, there was, I don't know if it was like a part of the dock that had been sunken, or just, it was something man-made down there that was, you know, had been sunk. And there was another good fish sitting in that one. And we fished for those fish all 3 days and never caught one of them. But day two, I got one of them to bite. And after like 3 or 4 casts of her following my jerkbait, she finally bit it enough to where I could feel her, and I pulled into her, and my rod loaded up just a tiny bit, and then she just pulled off. And Ooh. Then, you know, we went there day three, and they were both gone, and we think it's because of the conditions. But the reason that we kept going back to those docks is because we figured that, you know, with the warm week and the water warming up, that, and, you know, the majority of fish were, you know, at the back end of that creek, that maybe those females were out a little deeper, you know, sitting under the crappie under the docks, or, you know, sitting on a certain piece of structure. But then, you know, one of those days they might have moved up a little shallower where they were more catchable. So that's kind of why we visited those more often.
Oh, but okay.
Another thing is, like, kind of the only other thing we found kind of related to the docks that we could catch a fish on is the crossbars in the front of the dock slips.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those you could look at the light and see a fish sitting up in there. And one of our better fish on day two came off of one of those. It was like a 3 or 3.5 pound or something like that. So I bounced my jerkbait off it and then ate it. And there was one dock stall in particular that they were just stacked on. Like, you could throw your jerkbait in there and get bit, you know, every few casts. Yeah. It just wasn't always a big one.
Like, every day they were sitting on that same crossbar for some reason.
Dang, okay.
And then that was kind of the place that we had numbers of fish more than anywhere else. But we had, I think, 5 different pockets that had the numbers of fish in there as well. And on 2 of those pockets, there was like a steeper bank, and it, I mean, it wasn't a deep bank, it was just a steep bank. So I mean, it might have bottomed out in 6 to 10 foot, but they were a little bit steeper than just those flatter banks, and the fish were kind of holding on those, and if the wind was blowing, they'd get grouped up in the back of those pockets, or you know, one of the pockets had a drop on it that went from like 4 to 6 foot. And the first day of the tournament, we caught off, you know, a limit in 45 minutes just fishing around that drop. And then the second day of the tournament, went in there and only caught one fish off of it, but it was a 3-pounder. And then the third day, we didn't even catch fish in there. And we just...
We had one pull off in that cove that might have helped us on the last day a little bit.
But like those, in those pockets, they were still grouped up, and actually the pocket that we fished the final day and caught all our weight off of, they were sitting up on the rocks more than any other bank. And we think it's because there were more 2 to 4 pounders there than anywhere else, and so that's why they weren't grouped up as much.
Okay.
And so they'd be sitting on the rocks, and I mean, I wouldn't be able to see my jerkbait on my scope because it would be right against those rocks until it came out a little deeper. And then, I mean, we could see lots of, I mean, pretty quality fish following our jerkbaits, but could never get them to eat. And even the final day, we caught one that was three and three quarters and then a 3.5. And Cameron had one that was over three. I mean, it was probably over three, but one came off.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had one that pulled off after he had a couple head shakes. I don't know exactly how big it was, but and we just felt that there was bigger fish there, and we honestly felt like we missed our opportunity to win the tournament because of that, the 2 lost fish that we had and then not getting a big bite that final day. We thought that we just needed to catch that one of those one big fish that were, you know, following us all the way out to the boat on some casts, but you know, we just figured that last day with the clouds and the wind, you know, the wind was blowing straight in on our pocket there, and we figured that if we were getting those bites, then, you know, like the guys who were leading who caught 2 5-pounders the second day, we thought, man, those fish are really going to bite. And so we felt like we needed that one big bite that, I mean, we knew it was there, and that's why we spent so much time on that one spot, because we knew we needed one big bite, and it just never happened. I mean, we still had some quality fish, but, you know, we were just expecting someone else to catch them really well that day.
Yeah, and it's just like when we started catching them, like in the morning, he boated our first fish. It was like a little pound and a halfer, I think. And we're like, oh, we hope there's bigger ones here after that, and we hope we can catch one of those bigger ones. But next, I hooked into like one that was like 3, 3.5 pounds, and it pulled off like right outside the net. And of course, it's always that puts a damper on your mind. Like you start to rethink everything you're doing. Well, you try to put a positive spin on that, and we're thinking, well, if that one bit, then maybe there's a bunch more down there like him, and maybe they'll bite too. Maybe today's the day they're gonna bite.
Oh yeah. So, man, I really thought that final day, you know, the first 2 days it was like real cool night, kind of clear, and then, you know, it got warm those 2 days. Going into day three, it was only like, I don't know, upper 40s overnight. Like, it felt really good at takeoff.
Yeah.
You know, we had that rain coming in. It was cloudy. Like, it seemed like a day that if someone was going to catch 20 pounds in this tournament, that might be the day. It quickly became apparent early on that was not the case. Like, you guys caught them the best right out the gate. You know, everyone else, it was super slow. I was watching Josh Kelly. He had like 2 or 3, like 2 hours into the day. And about the time when you guys were idling in the back of Ketchum, and that's when I was like idling out and turn around and follow you guys back there, that was, you guys had like 13 pounds or something at that point. And I'm like, dang, these guys got it. But, you know, really, like you guys said, fishing this whole tournament, like, you kind of had to look over your shoulder and think, someone's about to catch 20 pounds because there's too many big ones in Grand Lake for someone to not stumble on a couple of them, especially with what Alex and Zach did on day two, catching that almost 18-pound bag.
Right, and that was and he said that, you know, the day one of the tournament they had, I think, 11 pounds, and they said that, you know, they were fishing a little too fast. But the second day, he said that they kind of dialed it in, that they needed to slow down a little bit, and really just focus on the pieces of cover that they're fishing and whatnot. And so, I mean, I just figured that someone was going to get a big bite. It was the right conditions for it. You know, Grand Lake has them, and I would not have thought that it would have taken, you know, less than 14 pounds a day to win this tournament, but it was just an extremely tough week, and it seemed like that there was a lot of groups of males just moved up shallow.
Yeah.
But the females were just not – they were just not having it. I don't know what it was. And
everybody was talking about every day at weigh-in and during practice, like, it was like that lake was a ticking time bomb for when those females are going to move up shallow and there's going to be a big bag caught. And we were just kind of waiting on that. Like, we kept on looking forward to that time and just hoping it would happen. So,
and I mean, I still think that within the next week, that switch is going to happen because of the warmer weather.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, we had those couple days of the first days of the tournament. It was the mid-60s and sunny and calm, and then, you know, like you said, that warm night, and then today's been really warm. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got to be really soon that those females are going to, you know, flip the switch and just move up and start eating. And we figured that would happen by the end of this tournament, mm-hmm. and it just really didn't. And you know what's weird too is that the guys who were leading said that they were fishing upper 40s, low 50s water temp the first 2 days, and then they got in there the third day, and it was like low 40s, even with the warmer night that we were having. And then actually our water was warmer. That was the warmest morning water temp wise by a couple degrees because of the warm night.
Yeah.
And so
we think that was a lot because of, like, we were fishing the backs of stuff, so that water tends not to move around as much as the stuff on the, like, out towards where they were. So especially with the wind in the last day moving everything around, I think it might have benefited us.
Yeah, and you guys, like you said, you had the wind blowing in on a lot of that stuff. Kind of where those guys were fishing, I think a lot of it, that wind was blowing out of that pocket. And so, like, what I was telling them when I was shooting their top 10 baits is, like, you know, maybe overnight. I mean, it wasn't super windy, but in the spring here, it doesn't take a whole lot to start moving some surface water, and you get a, you know, windy side of the bank. It'll be a little warmer than it will be on the leeward side, just because that surface water is kind of building up and heating up. So I told him I was going to talk to a couple guys and try to find out, you know, why that happened. I hadn't got around to it now, but either way, hey, it worked out for you guys. And I know one thing from walking around weighing, you know, there were a lot of guys there, a lot of local guys trying to look for any little bit of intel. One of our boat drivers, Jody's boat driver, was like running around asking all you guys how you caught them, what you caught them on, because there's a big tournament there yesterday, I believe. And you know, dudes were looking for any advantage, but I know you guys impressed the heck out of a bunch of Grand Lake locals, because I mean, fishing had been terrible. I mean, for the most part, it'd been pretty bad on Grand. And to catch, you know, I'm reading through your weights here. You got 13, 14 on day one, 13 pounds on day two, and 14, 10 on the final day, which was the biggest bag of the day. I mean, that's a heck of a feat under the conditions you guys were dealt with for that tournament.
Yeah, it was crazy how tough it was. I mean, you know, we knew it was going to be tough going in because of the freeze that happened. And even actually on day two of the tournament, we ran through a little bit of ice going down the lake.
That's
and
insane.
I think it burned off by the time that those later boat numbers went through. But I was really surprised to see that. And so, you know, that's we didn't even realize that it was still that cold on the main lake in some spots. And so that was definitely a big contributor to the toughness. And also, with the shad kill that was going on, you know, shad kill just makes it extremely difficult on any fishery, and it's hard to catch those fish. And I honestly think that's the main factor into why the big females were hard to catch, because they're big for a reason. They're lazy,
yep.
And that's why they're big too. And they, you know, they're just probably sitting around eating those shad that are dying because they know it's an easy meal. They don't have to burn a lot of energy. And, you know, that's, I mean, seeing a jerkbait or an A-rig, that's something they got to chase when there's shad they're dying floating down right to them. So I mean, in our area that we were catching them in, I mean, we saw lots of crappie. There was lots of big gizzard shad. I actually caught one that was 7-8 inches on a jerkbait.
Dang.
And so we knew there was the right kind of bait in there for those big females, but just with the shad kill just really made it difficult. And usually it's just the smaller size shad that that die, those bigger gizzard shad are fine with that cold water. But even still, those big bass will sit there and eat those little ones, you know, because it's an easy meal for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we eat the second day, we even had a big old shad, like a bass threw up in our live well, too, and mm-hmm. we saw that and kind of got clued into some more stuff, so like the jerkbait sizes that we were throwing and such.
Yeah, well, yeah, and even in practice, the one we had that was 3.5, he had a big old shad tail sticking out of his throat, too, so we knew the right kind of bait was in there for the big ones to be there, but it was just tough.
Tell me a little bit about, I mean, there were some guys that caught him on an A-rig in this tournament, but the jerkbait was like, I mean, that was the shining star. And for you guys, it kind of made sense, at least in my mind, because A, just the depth you guys were fishing. B, you know, with forward-facing sonar, it seems like it's a lot easier to try to make a fish react, right? If you know a fish is following, you can do stuff with your jerkbait or, like, at least figure out a cadence quicker that they're going to eat. But, like, did you guys throw a rig around? Did you catch fish on it? Or did you learn pretty early on in practice that that jerkbait was the deal?
Yeah, we threw around a rig a little bit, but you know, they weren't reacting to it the way we wanted to. We could see that they weren't coming up to it. We think it was going a little too fast for them. It wasn't like mimicking the dying shad they were eating either. So, yeah, it was just we never really got a bite on it.
Yeah, I mean, I had it out all 3 days of the tournament because, I mean, guys catch them on it. That's what big fish are caught on every winter. And I even downsized all my weights. To make that A-rig really light to where I could slow roll it really slow. And mm-hmm. they just, I mean, I know that Josh caught some fish on it, probably more than anybody, but they just, I don't know. We threw everything we could at them to try to make them bite something. You know, every kind of crankbait, we're throwing shaky heads and jigs. And
that floating fly? I saw that on the deck.
Yeah, threw a floating fly. That's the Ozark secret. I even threw a little 3-inch hair jig because those guys were catching them on the crappie jig after the first day.
Yep,
so I
yep.
tied me on a little hair jig. And, I mean, I caught some little ones on that floating fly, but, I mean, that's always a good bait. I mean, last week on Table Rock, I caught them really good on it. It's not something I would like to tell a lot of people about, but I doubt anybody's going to go crazy about it trying to figure it out. You know, no one wants to throw a little crappie jig around.
Yeah, no, people like cool stuff, man. They like jerk baits, A-rigs, yeah, crankbaits, spinner baits. Yeah,
no one wants to say, hey, I caught him on a bobber today, you know. Everyone wants yeah. to say, well, I caught him on a big old spinner bait.
Yeah,
you
or
know?
Like throwing an A-rig the size of a pumpkin.
Yeah,
right. But I mean, it really shows you guys tried a lot of tricks in the playbook to catch fish, and it wasn't really happening except on that jerkbait. And it wasn't one jerkbait. You guys had several jerkbaits you utilized, right?
Yeah. I mean, Cameron, he threw probably 10 different jerkbaits trying to figure out what they wanted.
I was like 2 seconds away from putting a snap swivel on my line just so I could switch them out every cast.
I think that's just what we caught fish on the entire week. And I think I caught one fish on a shad wrap that It was a weighted shad wrap, so I could slow it down. It wouldn't float up so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, we caught every single fish on a jerk. Oh, actually, yeah. Cameron caught one on a shaky head.
I caught one on a shaky head because I got a little school fired up and see if I could maybe catch one on. That was the only fish we caught all week that was on something that was on the bottom.
Wow.
And then that floating fly had a couple, but they just would not react. I mean, getting them to react was 100% the key because on those calm, sunny days, you know, a lot of time that makes fishing really tough. And, you know, before you have live scope, it makes it extremely tough. But now that you can make the fish react, and, you know, like that Toyota series this fall, same deal there. I just was watching them and had to make them react or else they would not follow it out and eat it.
Yeah.
So the same thing this week. And we figured out a cadence in practice, actually, that was if you worked your jerkbait too slow, they'd come up to it, look at it, and they'd, you know, I mean, it wouldn't trigger them, and they'd turn around and swim away. I don't know if it was just, you know, didn't get them to react, or they just was able to see that your jerkbait wasn't real. You know, they just lost interest. But then if you worked it too fast, they were too lethargic to catch it. So we just had to do like a slow but steady small twitch retrieve. And so that's just how we caught them all week was doing that.
Oh, okay.
And LiveScope was key to, just figuring that out. Just, watching them and seeing what would make them react. And that's just kind of what it was. Trying to keep it away from them, but enough to where they could catch up to it.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. It was like, you could tell which fish were going to eat it before they even ate it, pretty much, because like there was a few times where I almost go for the net pretty much before the fish even got to his face, because he would be like, oh, and I'd look down at the screen and I'd see a fish like streaking towards it, and I just knew I put the rod down and got the net. And then I'd turn around and he'd set the hook. And then you'd have some that would follow it all the way back to the boat, and then like, one twitch looked especially good to him for some reason, and they'd eat it.
Yeah, but, they'd fall for 40 foot and then eat it 10 foot from the boat. And a lot of those bigger fish would do that. Like, I'd twitch it all the way to the boat to where I was working it up, like straight up, because I was, didn't have any more room.
Right, right.
And they would follow it up 5, 6, 7 foot below the boat. And it was just ridiculous that how far they would follow it but not eat it most
there,
of the time.
There was one that got so close to the boat that he thought he had it, but he actually hit the trolling motor with his line and thought it was the fish. And that's how close the fish was. It was like all but staring at the trolling motor head.
Dang, man. Yeah, that technology is definitely, in the limited time it's been out, it has changed a lot of things, and it continually will. Because, if you're working a jerkbait, like at some point, even in cold water, you're probably going to like get it sort of close to the boat and then just reel it in and throw it back out there. Whereas, you guys knew whether something was falling or not. And, a lot of guys in this top 10 were doing something similar to that extent. So, that's pretty cool that you guys had everything real dialed, pieced out, and, the plan came together.
Yeah, and that's something that, we realize. And that's just fishing in general with LiveScope is you don't realize how many fish you pull it away from. If you would have just twitched it two more times, he would have caught up to it by then and ate it. But before, I probably would have missed out on half the fish that we actually caught, because I would have reeled in and made another cast, because I thought that they were just sitting on those rocks on the bank instead of following it out. But having that live scope, you can, you can work them. You can work those fish for, 40 feet trying to get them to eat it. And, we caught a decent amount of fish, that did fall it quite a ways before they ate it. And, our parents got to watch, since that was around a marina, and there was a lot of docks in there. So
they were up on the bank.
On the docks and watch us.
Yeah,
they were right there by those docks. They were up on the bank. And my dad said that there was an older guy, kind of looked like, just a local. He was out there on that final day, and he came in between those docks that we were getting ready to come fish. And he said he fished all the way around those docks, real slow, working his, long pauses. With his jerk bait, he didn't catch nothing. And then he said that we pulled in there like 10 minutes later and caught three or four really quick. And, that was the difference. It was because he was, letting that jerk bait sit there. And those fish won't eat it. If you have the smallest difference, in your retrieve or anything, they just won't eat it.
Yeah, it just kind of goes to show like that live scope technology. It doesn't just do a whole lot. Like sure, you can watch the fish eat it on the screen and whatnot, but more so than that, it helps you out in the way of like what makes the bass bite, like what actually triggers that bass to eat your bait, and helps you out just so every single cast you make, whether you can see your jerk bait or not, you have a better chance of catching one.
Yeah, because you're more efficient.
Like even on like we fish right beside each other on the bow of the boat, I'm looking at the same screen he's looking at, but since he's got his foot on the trolling motor, most of the time I don't get to see my jerk bait. But even though I couldn't see it, I still knew what cadence to use, so I still caught a lot of fish throughout the week.
Yeah,
especially on that last day, I caught a lot of bass on the last day.
Yeah, the last day was the day that we saw the least amount of fish eaten on LiveScope, just because we kind of had it figured out by then, and you didn't necessarily need to see them because we knew, how to make them bite. That's just kind of what happened all week.
That's
cool. Even what we've talked about with LiveScope is that it's kind of like the Alabama rig when it came out, the early, 2010, 11, 12, 13, if you weren't throwing it, you got beat by it 100% of the time. And that's what LiveScope is today. And if you don't have it, you're getting beat by it.
And,
true
I
that.
Can tell you, there's one more person out there that happens to be maybe sitting in his truck right now that may be getting LiveScope on his boat pretty soon.
Oh, man. Well, I kind of want to ask you guys quick, you know, you mentioned that your family was there to watch. What was it like to win the national championship with, you know, your family there? And really, you're not all that far from, you know, from school and from home, really. So, what was it like when Chris Jones said you guys were the national champions?
It hadn't even really fit in yet. Like, we were up there, you know, I was shaking like a leaf in the wind up there on stage, and I kind of commented on that. We were on the Phoenix Boats hot seat. That little pedestal seat was pretty much the only thing keeping me from passing out. And just, you know, having our family in the crowd there, and, you know, my mom is sitting in the crowd looking at me, and dad sitting there, and they're cheering, just made even more special. Like, it was just amazing. Even to have them out there on the water, like, they kind of followed us around in that Ketchum Cove area and watched us fish most of our spots. And just to be able to catch a bass and take him out of the net, hold him up for the camera, and then hold him up to your family, and hear your family yelling from a boat dock or the bank was just awesome.
And especially all the support that they put in, all the time and effort that they put in towards it. I mean, it's awesome for them to see this come together, too. And so it was so awesome that this was the tournament that was close and that they got to be at. And I mean, it just made it so much more special than if we were somewhere else where, you know, probably our parents would have been there, but like both of our grandparents got to come, you know, my cousin and girlfriend got to be there. And, you know, it was such a cool whole week that they all got to see that. And I mean, it was just awesome. You know, like we jumped down from stage and, you know, everyone, half our families were crying and, and, you know, everyone's so excited. My dad ran over to me and like picked me up, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Kevin was trying to shuffle us over to get some more pictures or some stuff in. And I was like, I just told him, I asked Kevin straight up. I was like, can I hug mama first? And he was like, go for it. And I was like, yes. So of course mama's crying and everything. So yeah, it was just amazing. And then, kind of got the remnants, sitting there, my grandparents were like, and to think this all started out when we bought you a kayak to chase smallmouth around in the creek. And it was just something to think about that. It's like, just kind of took us back.
That's all it takes to build that desire, man. And I imagine like your guys' phones have probably been blown up too with, you know, thank you texts and calls. And like, Cole, your phone's been blowing up a little bit. Just in the time we've been chatting here a little bit. So I imagine thank yous are coming from all sorts of ways.
Yeah, they are. It's awesome the support that we have. And, you know, like having the rest of our team, they were there because they were in another tournament. But, you know, getting long calls from them. And, you know, by the time we got in the truck to head home, I probably had, you know, 20-something messages that, you know, were on my phone. And, you know, and then made a post on Instagram, Facebook that had, you know, over 100 comments. It's like, it's insane how many, you know, people actually follow you that you don't even know about, really.
Yeah,
It's also cool just, like, to get to meet all those guys in that top 10. And, like, you kind of form a special bond with them almost because, you know, you're sitting there on the boat dock on the last day and there's only 10 boats out there. And everyone's looking at each other like you're chasing after people. But at the same time, it's like, it's a friendly sport. Like, we all get along and such, and that's actually kind of funny because my phone's been blowing up a little bit here too, and I had to turn on silent. But the man Josh Kelly is getting on my phone right now too. So just met him the other day, and what an awesome guy! So
he is bad to the bone what he did this week by himself. That was just awesome.
And oh
just,
yeah,
like,
dude.
College fishing is like that. Like all of us have the same passion. We all like to catch bass, and just getting around like a bunch of guys your age group and that all share the same deal, and just meeting people like Josh and everybody else is just amazing.
Now, we can't overlook the fact that there was another Drury team in the top 10, Grant and Bo. They finished like third or fourth, or I'm looking at a piece of paper here, fourth. I asked Bo this on day two, but I want your guys' opinion now after you won. Did you guys put any sort of wager on who was going to win or who was going to finish higher than the other? Like, was there any friendly competition within the team itself?
There's always competition, but it's not
harsh competition.
With those guys, it's not harsh. It's, you know, I mean, every night we're rigging up talking about how to catch fish. We're, I mean, we were trying to be helpful to each other every day, trying to help each other figure out what the fish were doing or how to get them to bite, or, you know, like, hey, what bait, you know, have you got them figured out on, or have you tried this to try to, I mean, it's, I think we have a great relationship with everyone. And I mean, obviously it's competitive and, you know, it feels good to be the guys that won, but I mean, if we didn't win, you know, I'd want those guys to be up there. And it's competitive, but we're not, you know, it's really cool. And I mean, we don't have any bets or anything on it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So yeah, there was no like money wagers or like losing team has to dress up in a chicken
like
costume
nothing
and run around campus or nothing like that.
No.
That may be a good idea, but nothing like that.
You
I
get
mean,
next.
Now that we think about it, we should have done something like that.
Yeah, next time you guys are in this situation, holler at me. I got some ideas that are just
okay,
friendly.
Yeah. We did a little deal, what was it, a couple of years ago where we made the whole team kind of made a bet one season where if somebody won a big tournament that had over 100 boats in it, or somebody got top 10 in the national championship, a national championship, everybody else had to shave lightning bolts inside their hair.
Oh, see, and, that's what I'm talking about.
One of the teams at the national championship that one year got 10th.
Oh.
So, everybody got a lightning bolt.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. That's what I was hoping you guys. But yeah, Bo, when I asked him, he was like, "Yeah, no, not really. No, nothing cool." I'm like, "Oh, well, that's disappointing."
Yeah. And yeah, we were talking about stuff like who's gonna win, kind of like playing games on stuff. But, we were also saying is like if one of our jury teams doesn't win, then we were like, you know, that Josh Kelly kid, it'd be cool if he won that boat and everything. So,
dude, well, you guys were talking about, you know, seeing ice on the lake. Well, it took Josh like an hour to get down to where you guys were fishing. He was in the same area, so that was like well gone by the time he probably rolled through.
Oh yeah, yeah, it definitely was.
It was cool to see that he put in work like that in that tracker. It just goes to show it doesn't matter what kind of boat you're in.
Oh, absolutely.
And, it's just he put a beat down on him in that thing. So
yeah, he did. I mean, I'm scared if he had a, you know, the same boat that we were running, because he would have had more time to fish, and I'm not so sure that he wouldn't have caught some big ones.
Dangerous man at that point.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I don't want to keep you guys too much longer, but there is another thing I want to ask you guys about, and you know, it comes with winning the national championship. You guys both get a bid to fish the 2021 Toyota Series Championship, which is on Pickwick this fall. Either of you guys ever fished Pickwick before?
Yeah, we fished the you know, School of the Year championship the past 2 years on Pickwick. And I know Cameron's been there in the spring before, but I know this is a fall event, and it's going to be, you know, way different from the typical ledge fishing that we've seen there. And, I mean, you know, like the past couple fall tournaments that they've had there, it looks like it's – if you can find the smallmouth, you know, you're going to do well. So – not really. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff we got to do to prepare for that. But I mean, we know what the lake looks like. We've got a good rundown of the lake. Maybe not of that fall fishing. But I think we're excited and ready for it. Mm-hmm.
You guys are ready to fish for a shot at $200,000?
Oh, definitely. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah, I could. I can't blame you there. Well, that's cool, man.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go on. No.
If you do well in the tournament, you know, it gives you an opportunity to maybe like step up next level and kind of do those as a professional and maybe make your way to the MLF Pro Series.
Yeah, man. Like I know there's people out there that are like, oh man, these guys shouldn't get bids into the championship, blah 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 blah. But at the same time, for the sport and to grow it, and especially like with, you know, what we do here, where we have the high school fishing platform, college fishing, you know, BFLs, Toyota Series, and then the pro circuit, obviously. And then, you know, from there you could qualify for the Bass Pro Tour, you know, where you have that whole thing, like giving guys like yourselves a chance to fish at that level and then maybe parlay that into a career is really unique and pretty cool. Because, you know, for most, like I'm thinking about me in college, like, all you guys were holding up Megabass jerkbaits and all this stuff. Like, man, I couldn't even afford like one jerkbait in college, let alone a Megabass, you know? So like to try to think about fishing a division of the Toyota series as a college kid seems insane. You know, you could be Cody Huff and just win you a couple of them, then it doesn't really matter. But, you know, that's not every college kid. And I think our top 10 here on Grand was a pretty good peek into just good anglers, you know, that are, you're in college, right? That's it. But you guys did, you know, you fished the heck out of it. And, you know, now you get this chance to go fish at the Toyota series. And you don't even have to win there. Just a, you know, a good finish there could be that little break into, you know, getting your foot in the door. Maybe some sponsors come your way. Maybe, you know, new opportunities come your way. Yeah. And now you can kind of take the next step. Yeah, without, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of, you know, pain and agony to get you to that, right, that next level.
And that's what's awesome about college fishing is it gives us that opportunity to fish across the country and to learn and get better, that a lot of guys have to pay a lot of money to get that experience and that opportunity. So, you know, being able to, you know, have Drury that, you know, supports us and pays for all that travel and expenses and, you know, allows us to fish. And then, you know, now that Major League Fishing gives us that opportunity to fish that tournament that usually takes, you know, $1,700 entry fees plus all your expenses. And I mean, yeah, like you were saying, that's not really doable for any college guy.
Right.
So that opportunity is, that's the only opportunity that we have to make it pro. And it's really great that we get the opportunity because we wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, guys, I could keep shooting the breeze with you for a while, but I think I'm going to let you get rolling. Before I do, each of you guys should let the folks listen to this know like where they can follow your team. And then, you know, maybe you guys want to throw out your social channels or, you know, any way people can follow along with, you know, your journey through college fishing and on to whatever you got going on after that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. You can follow Drury Bass Fishing at just Drury Bass Fishing on Instagram, our coach, and also the team on Facebook too. So, and my personal Instagram is Cameron_M_Smith on Instagram. So yeah, I appreciate a follow.
Yeah. And mine's Cole Breeden Fishing at, on Instagram. And, you know, I did the same thing on Facebook too. And actually just recently started a podcast called the Bass Central Podcast, and just trying to aim it towards, you know, college fishing in general, just because there's not as big of an opportunity for college guys to talk fishing as there is for professionals. And I mean, that's just what guys, you know, are more interested in is the better fishermen. And so I thought it'd be cool if there'd be, you know, a more of an opportunity for us college guys to, you know, get on and just talk about maybe every tournament that we have. And, you know, me and Cameron are going to do one of those this week, and pretty much the same thing we're doing now, just, you know, talk about this tournament, how it's going. So I have that on YouTube and Apple Podcasts and Instagram as well. It's the Bass Central Podcast.
Nice. So. Okay. Well, I guess now I got to start listening to another podcast. And, you know, if you guys are other light on guests, feel free to holler at Jody or myself. I'm sure we're probably more than free to talk some bass fishing with you and drop a little insight on you know, all things college.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You guys know what's going on.
You got our numbers, man. Just holler at us. Well, with that, gentlemen, I'm gonna let you get rolling. I appreciate the time, and congratulations again. It was a heck of a performance on Grand, and I can't wait to follow you guys along, see what happens, and I'll definitely probably bug you guys some more as we get closer to that Toyota Series Championship this fall. Few lures have stood the test of time like the original Rattle Trap by Bill Lewis, and now, with the help of Major League Fishing Pro Mark Daniels Jr., we're launching the SB57 and MR6. Go to rattletrap.com to learn more. Ooh, coming out of an interview with a little bit of spice on the...
It's like Kyle is advertising doing work, and then Kyle is selling stuff.
Mm.
Glorious.
Mm. I love it.
I am a huge fan. Kyle, let's talk about the Natty.
Let's do.
Because honestly, this was one of the weirder tournaments that I feel like I've ever covered from a who caught fish perspective.
Yeah.
Because there were like quite a few teams that were catching pretty good numbers of fish. Mm-hmm. And then there were teams that were like not getting a bite for multiple days in a row.
Yeah, man.
And boy, was it like, the haves didn't have all that much. They had numbers. They didn't have that Grand Lake size. Mm-hmm. But the have-nots, boy, they did not have it.
No. It was, it was, I mean, obviously the conditions for the event
were bad.
Yeah, if you were thinking about catching a fish, like, it probably, I mean, there were a lot of local guys that were just saying, I ain't going out there, you know?
Jeremy Lawyer, one of them.
Yeah.
Snubbed us when it came to catfishing. He was like, the catfish ain't biting at Grand Lake.
I'm like, well,
gosh, that was the
There's no way that bodes well for the college kids. But yeah, definitely some kids caught him. And the wild thing was, like, running around day one of the tournament, I was like up the elk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we both kind of thought, well, certainly a top 10 team will come from the elk. Like, there's a lot of really good fish up there. The water's clear.
Yeah.
Like, it would set up maybe better for cold water temps. But there's a lot of pressure up there. And a lot of the teams I ran into that did have a fish or a couple fish were just stoked that they actually got a bite. Like, they went the entire practice period and never caught a fish. So,
yeah, and I think, like, day one, we ran into, like, one of the top 10 teams, I think.
Yeah, yep.
And even then, they only, on day two, that was the McKendree team, I think they only caught two on day two. So mm-hmm. they were one of the lower volume teams. But yep. man, in duck and drowning some, but much more in Ketchum, and then even like further down than Ketchum, like, dude, there were a lot of fish to be caught down there.
Yeah, there were.
I mean, if you like, so Murray State, you know, they were in second, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they like caught a lot of fish pretty consistently. Like, you'd roll up to them in the morning and they'd have like four and they wouldn't be like hyped about it. It was just the way it was.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. A lot of these top 10 teams were definitely, and especially the top kind of four teams. Well, and Josh Kelly, solo.
But not a team, but, you know, pretty baller.
They were never concerned. Like, catching a limit wasn't an issue to any of those guys.
Yeah.
It was just like, we need to catch a 3.5 pounder. Like, we can, a limit, fine, we can handle that. We just don't know how to catch a big one. And those 3, 3.25, 3.5 pounders became gold.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the top, you know, the top slate, you know, Cole and Cameron, they caught 13 and 13 and 14. And basically everyone else, I mean, really nobody else caught 14 except, Alex Johnson and Zachary Potter, who caught 17, but like,
yep.
Basically getting to 13 consistently was actually pretty hard. You know, every other team had at least one 12 pound day.
Yeah.
And you needed more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was weird. Do you have any inkling why that lower end was like so good? I guess logistically it kind of makes sense. Like, it's down there. It should be a little bit deeper, a little bit warmer, a little less affected by the ice. Like, so I could see that. At the same time, like, those creeks didn't look like much different or better than drowning or duck.
Yeah.
Or heck, even some parts of horse looked pretty good. Like, it didn't totally click with me.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, because going into it, we thought a lot of fish would be caught kind of main lake, right? Like, almost wintery, main lake.
Yeah, like some more of winter kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, you know, you don't, if you were in the Carolinas, it wouldn't shock you to be like, oh, they're catching them out of a drain. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, it doesn't have to be main lake for fish to be in the middle or deep.
Right,
You know, spotted bass country, stuff like that. But here, like, we sort of had in our mind, yeah, probably main lake. But the main lake was real muddy, so it's like, all right, well, we get why it's not the main lake, but the fact that it was all concentrated down there was the surprising part.
Yeah, and I think you had, you know, definitely there was a pretty substantial increase in water temperature when you got towards the back of some of those shorter pockets mm-hmm. on the main lake down there. Like, it was the right amount of color to the water where it's not too dirty and too cold to not, or have the fish not want to bite. But it moved a lot of fish shallow. There seemed to be a lot of bait. Like, I know in Ketchum there were birds everywhere. There were herons. There were cormorants. There were, I mean, coots frolicking around. There was a lot of stuff happening back there. And it was kind of the same way in the back of drowning, too, to an extent. But yeah, it was definitely still kind of weird. Drury, they're not even entirely sure like why, but I mean that's where they were. And but it also, you know, it could be too, maybe it's ease of access to that deeper water, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, catch them where those guys were catching them was like weirdly far back
to me. And especially Josh,
where
it was
especially like, where, you know,
like 6
Albertson and
max.
Ripple and Kelly were like, yeah. That's like, what are you guys doing there? But you're right, you know, Lovin and Martin, the second place Murray team, like, they were fishing deep water. They were not far from the dam, like, or from the main lake. Like, there was no that made a lot more sense than, you know,
well, a lot of these other teams.
Some of these other teams are doing. Even, you know, even Browning and Harris, you know, from Drury, like, and Johnson and Potter, like, where they were back in Drowning, like, that's quite a long way from main drag. Like, it's not shocking to me that there will be fish there, but, you know, I've covered tournaments later in the year on Grand, I think, or maybe about the same time, where guys, like, made the top 10 and were fishing a jig on docks a quarter mile, a half mile before they got to where those guys were, and they never even sniffed that far back.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool, though. I mean, they figured out how to catch them on that lake, and I don't think that maybe if you put Bradley Hallman out there or Edwin Evers, maybe they would have caught more. I mean, they're pros. But, like, at the same time, it certainly didn't seem like there was some missing secret ingredient that these guys didn't find. Like, this was just literally the best way to do it.
Yeah. And you know, I told Drury and I told a lot of the other top 10 guys on the final day, like, there's a lot of locals here that are really impressed with what all those guys did. That, regardless of what they weighed in the final day or first day or whatever, a lot of guys were standing around weighing going, dang.
Yeah, because, you know, Grant has a reputation for, like, it would not have been surprising if the, let's say, three of the top four teams didn't weigh in a limit at least one of the days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't have shocked anyone to, for this tournament to be won with a team, by a team that caught four fish once.
Yeah.
Yep. And they didn't. I mean, these guys caught them, which was super cool. I think we should touch on baits a little bit.
Yeah.
One, absolute ultra jerkbait tournament.
Ultra jerkbait.
The top 10 baits is, like, basically entirely mega bass. I mean, there's a few non, but
yeah, mostly a 110, maybe a plus one.
Yeah. It's important to note, we have no idea how these college kids got the money for all these mega bass jerkbaits. We can't figure it out. If you guys know, let us know.
I was shocked.
Like, I think I bought a mega bass jerkbait in college, and I was like, ooh, this is my mega bass jerkbait.
Yeah, I couldn't even wrap my head around the thought of purchasing one. These kids rolling, like, boxes deep of mega bass.
Yeah, so that was wild. One thing I think is interesting, though, is, like, the sheer number of colors that caught them in this tournament.
Yeah, it was actually kind of diverse.
I mean, it was not just straight pro blue.
Right.
There were a lot of colors. One of the most interesting ones, I would say definitely the most interesting one, was the PM Twilight Chartreuse back.
Yeah.
That showed up a couple times. It's a very unique looking color. It's not, I would say, your typical Clearwater jerkbait color. I kind of felt like because the water color wasn't gin clear, that might have opened up a really broad range of what guys could throw from a jerkbait standpoint.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, it didn't have to be translucent, or that wasn't super important, you know. And we had changing conditions. We had sunny, 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 and then we had clouds.
Clouds, yeah.
So I felt like it really let people take a broad range of what works.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to talk about really the most important bait development from this tournament?
It was the day you brought it up to my attention.
I think it was day one, too, by the way. We, like, got on this early.
No way.
Because it's huge. This is absolutely giant news.
It's not
huge.
Bait's not huge,
yeah.
But it's big news.
Anyway, so Murray State, Harbor Lovin, Zachary Martin. Harbor, love your name. It's hilarious. They caught him on a crappy jig.
Yeah.
And I watched them catch him. This is not a lie. This is 100% top 10 baits, truth. There have been lies in top 10 baits before. This is not one of those times.
Yeah, this is for real.
They caught him on a Jenko Big T Fry Daddy with a quarter ounce Kevin Rogers head. I don't know much about crappie fishing, but it was pretty dope.
Yeah, I don't either. But, I mean, it definitely looks like something a bass would eat. And it's like on the bigger end of crappie stuff.
Now, yeah, also, the Big T is a 3-inch bait.
Yeah. But still, I mean, it's essentially
the Big T Fry Daddy. Sorry, the Fry, like there's like a Fry Baby or something that's 2 inches.
Oh.
The Daddy is like the largeness of it.
But yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, they caught some on jerkbait too, but that was dope. They were like fishing it kind of mostly vertical, basically, on live scope, obviously. Also, if you didn't have live scope in this tournament, I mean, I guess you could finish, I don't know, fifth, sixth. You weren't going to win. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
But they were catching them. Harbor was like mostly fishing it, and he said that sometimes you would see the fish bite it on live scope and feel the fish bite it, and he would set the hook and they would only have half the bait.
Whoa.
But sometimes they would bite it, and you'd see them bite it and feel them bite it, and you set the hook and they'd have it in the crushers. Like, they were biting so weird. You know, there were some fish that were literally uncatchable on a crappie jig.
That?
Which is cool.
That says some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that any of these people caught fish at all is a sort of a minor miracle.
Yes.
In the grand scheme of things. But anyway, that's what, I guess that's pretty much the lowdown.
Yeah, I think so.
Shout out to Josh Kelly for going solo in a tracker. That's extremely baller.
Yep.
Huge fan.
Hour run, one way, just to get where he was fishing.
Dude, so we talked about this a little bit the other day. If Josh Kelly is in a faster boat, doesn't have to be bigger, doesn't have to be anything, just has to be like 20 miles an hour faster, man, he might win that tournament.
Maybe, man.
I mean, it was a close enough tournament where it's like, boy, if he could have had an extra hour to fish, you never know what could have happened.
The jury guys felt the same way. Like, they're like, man, if Josh had our boat, he might have beat us, you know?
I mean, he crushed it. And I think he was in second place on day one. Like, he brought the heat. So yeah. That was cool to see.
Yeah.
But also, Josh, if you're listening, please don't get a new boat. We love that boat.
Yeah, man. Keep rocking.
Yeah, or at least stick with aluminum.
Or maybe that tracker sponsorship comes through.
Yeah, you know, keep tagging them. Yeah, in case anyone from Tracker is listening, which probably not, you've been tagged on Instagram.
Hook him up.
So, yeah, he doesn't really need a new ride. It's perfect, but you know, I'm sure he wouldn't say no to a new ride.
Yeah, maybe just a slightly bigger one.
Yeah, like a 90 horsepower.
Yeah.
Oh, just blazing along.
Just ripping.
Yeah. All right, so I think that pretty much wraps it up there. Kyle, do you want to just touch on Lake of the Ozarks, kind of what went down there, and maybe next week we go more in depth?
Yeah, because the Lake of the Ozarks series event was going on the same time as the Natty, and Michael Harlan won it wire to wire. He basically blew the thing out.
Yeah, like nobody touched him.
It was pretty insane, and I definitely want to try to get on the phone with him and learn a little more about what he did, because it was pretty much an A-rig. It was pretty much forward-facing sonar, and the dude caught 21-11 day one, 20 pounds on day two, and 20 pounds 6 ounces on the final day. And cleaned house. He won. He had 62-1 for a total. Literally, the rest of the top 10 was like somewhere in the 40s, except Russ Lane. But like 40 to 46 pounds was second through ninth. So, you know, he had it pretty dialed. And that seemed like very much an A-rig tournament. Like, I think we kind of talked about how we thought maybe they'd smash him. Well, they didn't really smash him. But Harlan sure did. And we'll get to the bottom of that. But, you know, if you're curious, that's what happened. If you want to know more about it, MajorLeagueFishing.com. We got top 10 baits and patterns up there. You can scroll through.
There's stuff to peruse, and we may get dialed in more next week. Smith Lake, baby.
Smith Lake.
Stop number 2 of the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit. We have been to Smith Lake a lot. It's been a while since we've had like a true pre-spawn derby on Smith Lake. Not to say this will be an entirely pre-spawn derby, because, boy, it's warm out right now.
it's super weird because it was cold a couple mornings of practice, Yeah. Last night, we're here on the off day. Last night, it didn't get that cool.
It
was actually pretty
warm in the morning.
Warm this morning. It got warm today. It's supposed to get kind of or stay warm overnight. And really, that trend lasts through this whole tournament. Now, I'm not saying fish are going to be flooding to the bank spawning, but there's probably going to be a lot of them thinking, man, I better just pull up and start getting comfy. And, like, whatever you guys saw on social media from guys practicing, we heard a lot of griping and moaning about it, but a lot of guys were also tooting the same horn of a lot of stuff's going to change by day one of the tournament, yeah. So we'll see how things are going, you know, when they actually take off.
I think it's going to be interesting because I think a lot of stuff is changing, has changed. At the same time, this is a deep lake.
Mm-hmm.
These are spotted bass. Some of them have already spawned. Some of them might start spawning. But we've seen spawning tournaments where guys, like, major spawning events, where also, you know, let's say Scott Martin catches some schooling off a certain dock and then catches fish on beds. Like, there's a broad range,
mm-hmm.
and this is not going to be... I don't think there's a chance that this turns into, like, let's say Martin or Hartwell or... Like,
oh, yeah.
Some of these events were, like, spawning really, really, truly dominated.
No.
It's going to be a factor. Could John Cox win with a 5-pounder he catches off the bat on the final day? That wouldn't surprise me.
No, yeah, not at all.
But there's also, like, a lot of fish that are going to be off the bank because that's how Smith Lake is. It's how spots are.
Yep.
There's a lot of opportunity from a lot of, I think, standpoints in this one.
Mm-hmm. There's also a lot more, I think we have a little more diversity on watercolor kind of throughout the lake.
It's a little weird, like, rock, when you get up it pretty good, is, you know, kind of dirty. I would say that lower end seems pretty clear, pretty good.
Yeah,
right?
Down
you guys kind of rode
yep,
around.
Yep.
Ryan is, I've seen Ryan dirtier than it is. Like, mm-hmm. Ryan's kind of clean and good looking. Like, it seems like, I don't know if the watercolor will make a difference, is what I'm saying, I guess. Like, it doesn't seem like it's so, so clear in places where... it'll, like, eliminate certain techniques totally off the board.
Oh, yeah. But it definitely, it reflects in water temps you see around the lake, which, you know, guys were seeing, like, even on day one of practice, guys were seeing close to 60 degrees in some spots. And from the largemouth standpoint, in a lot of these pockets, that's going to be a big deal, right? Like, we've always, remember the time McMillan here weighed, like, 4, but he had 4 for, like, 16 or something,
mm-hmm.
and it was all largemouths. Or I'm probably really off on those, but the point is, like, there's some mega largemouths, and I think there's going to be some guys that dial in, like, a couple of those big bites. Or we were talking about it earlier too. You can go catch you some spotted bass, maybe quick in the morning. Make a couple of stops. Well, you could probably just go on ahead and slide shallow, or go to, like, some dirty water, and just start cruising the bank with a spinnerbait or a chatterbait or a crankbait or really whatever you want to do, and you might have a better odds of getting that big bite this time around versus maybe when we've been here early in the year before.
Yeah. I think that you could. I think that one thing that I'm curious about is a lot of the largemouth historically, not all of them, but quite a few come out of that Ryan arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there might be a little too much pressure in the Ryan arm this time for it to kind of shine the way sometimes it has.
Yeah.
Because we're going out of Coleman, which the Smith Lake Park, which is in the Ryan arm. So now, like, I think if a guy wants to take that hike down into Rock, up the Sipsey, all the way down to the dam, like, I think a lot of guys are going to be really well placed to catch fish and not have quite as much company as they would if they stick around in the Ryan. Now, I'm not saying John Cox won't stay in the Ryan and smash him because he's John Cox, but... I'm not betting against the guy, ever.
He did go to... There's a little pocket in Ryan that John catches him, like, almost every time he comes here. And I don't think he's allowed to fish it this time. It's got some, like, no boats allowed buoys or something. And
it's bad.
Bad. Yeah, he checked that pretty quick and was like, oh, man.
I'm not too worried. In the scheme
me either.
Of things.
Yeah, me either. No.
He'll find new spots.
Yeah. He'll persevere.
Yeah, so I guess I'm very interested in this tournament. Like, I might have said I was interested in Okeechobee, but I was not as... if I did, I was lying compared to my level of interest in this one. How's that for?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like, this is cool. I love Spotted Bass. I love this lake. It's so pretty.
Also,
good memories.
Guys, like, we've talked to some guys that have tried to catch some fish on forward-facing sonar.
It's not and easy.
It's not. Yeah.
It can be done. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I watched Wiggins do it. Like, you know, he would see one and sometimes it would bite his jerkbait before he got it all the way down. He had one hit his jerkbait while it was still while the hook was tangled up, and he saw it on forward facing sonar. And you know, that's good, right?
Yeah.
It was like a 3-pounder.
Dang.
It's clutch. Now, not every fish is going to do that. There's probably feeding windows you got to deal with. I saw a lot of fish that Wiggins threw a jerkbait at or threw a Ned rig at that did not bite.
Yep.
So there's definitely, he's got active target, which is pretty dope, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, there's probably some opportunity to get burned by forward-facing sonar. At the same time, like, you know, man, there's a lot of fish you can see with it. So if somebody can unlock that a little bit, you never know.
Either way, this should be a pretty good derby from a fish-catching standpoint. Also, yeah. You'll probably hear about it this week.
Oh, guys are going to complain.
Yeah, the minimum is 15 inches.
Which is higher than usual at Smith Lake. We usually get an exemption.
Right. We did not get an exemption this time. So, a little bigger fish to go in the box. So, when you're watching live come the weekend and guys are tossing back 14 and 3/4 inches, and you're like, whoa, man, that looks like a keeper. It's got to be 15.
Yeah. Tristan, if you're listening.
this time it is.
This time it is 15. Now, here's the one note about that. I asked Wiggins, I was like, so is this going to matter for the guy who wins? He's like, no.
No.
So maybe the guy in 70th place will only catch 4 one day, and that's good for them. Guy in 40th might. You got to check. Congrats.
Yep.
The guy who wins this, the people in the top 10, top 5, this is not going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to... I mean, barring something just truly ridiculous, a la 16 pounds for 4, and then, you know, having to throw back 3 12-inch spots, like, you're not going to have a situation where this impacts you mm-hmm. and makes you lose the tournament. I don't think. So, it's going to be different. You'll hear about it. It's not the game changer on the top end.
Right, right.
It'll just make weights farther down in the field lower than maybe typical.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, again, it's not going to be the super, super huge deal because these guys are good. They're going to catch big ones.
Yeah.
Anything else, Kyle?
I think that's it.
All right. I think that's good. It's probably time to start cooking.
Yeah, we got to get some pork chops going, yeah.
Yeah, so... Folks, MajorLeagueFishing.com is your home this week. Live starts Saturday, Sunday. It's going to rock. You can obviously watch weigh-ins. We got a lot of coverage the other days. And Kyle, you're Kyle Lumber on Instagram. I'm Jody Blanco. We got an email address?
We do. Send us questions, comments, concerns. Hit us up, podcast@MajorLeagueFishing.com or FLWFishing.com.
Yeah.
Next week. Should still work.
Next week, we're going to play the color game again.
Yeah, next week we'll both be back home, not yes. on the road, so we will be able to actually kind of...
Depending how fast my boat gets fixed,
Jody might be like, wow, Jody died. It'll just be
what
Kyle
happened?
On the podcast.
Oh, his boat works again. but yeah, I think next week we'll be probably crushing it and playing some games and not be quite so pressed for time.
Yeah, I think so.
Are you going to... Say goodbye.
Oh, yeah. I guess, you know, everyone, have fun. Get out fishing. Spring's here. And until next time, see you.